Welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. It's a Friday, and we have got exciting news about your Democrat candidate for governor.
Are you ready to elect Ray Cooper your governor?
Ray Cooper is polling very strongly and getting a strong endorsement from Hillary Clinton. And joining me here at the top of the show is Susan Myrick. She's the elections policy analyst with the Civitas Institute. And just in case there's any confusion, Susan, I want to hear Hillary again.
Are you ready to elect Ray Cooper your governor?
It's Ray Cooper for governor. So she, just a real glowing endorsement there. It's obvious that she has her finger on the pulse of who the candidates are.
In North Carolina.
And she's been here a lot. And, you know, she's probably tired. You know, it's been a long, grueling campaign.
Probably tired.
But just in case there's any doubt about who she is encouraging people to vote for.
Ray Cooper, your governor.
So I'm sure that Roy Cooper.
I just love that.
Appreciates the strong endorsement of Ray Cooper by Hillary Clinton. That's too funny, isn't it?
It's great.
Yeah, you got to have a little humor to break up all of the tension that surrounds the final few days of the campaign. So the reason I wanted to get you here at the top of the show, this is kind of important news right down your alley. The headlines say federal officials to monitor voting in 5 counties. And this is something that is not unusual. The Justice Department has sent observers to North Carolina routinely for watching presidential elections. And normally it's never been really made a big headline issue, but there was a lawsuit filed by the NAACP earlier this week. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that? Apparently some challenges were made by private citizens over people's names being listed on voter rolls.
I think it was in 3 counties that citizens were challenging the voter registration of certain voters in their county, where they found those voters didn't actually live where they said they lived. And they followed the law. They went through the process exactly like they should and brought it up to a hearing with the local Board of Elections. And those challenges, many of them were sustained, and those voters' names were removed from the rolls. The NAACP is charging that it was purging voters. It's not purging voters. It's going through a process to remove voters that don't live where they say they live anymore.
Well, the NAACP on Tuesday filed a federal lawsuit because in Cumberland, Moore, and Beaufort, private citizens were lodging complaints. And what it was is that there are procedures in place in state law to cancel voter registrations that are challenged by local residents. And so if a voter has died or moved away and don't have an accurate address, then legitimately
they should be removed.
They can be removed from the rolls. They,
that's right. And a lot of times that doesn't happen. I mean, we can see at any given time in North Carolina over 500,000 voters that are, so they call them inactive. And we know they don't live at those addresses anymore.
So WRAL, in their story, kind of editorializing a little bit, the first sentence says, amid heightened concerns about access to the polls. Now, nobody has, that I'm aware of, mentioned anything about, quote, access to the poll. That sentence kind of smacks of, oh, people won't be able to get out of their cars and
walk
to the...
Right, there's been threats.
Yeah, and that's
and there's
just
no
not the case
evidence
at all.
Of threats.
You know, I think that's sloppy journalism
it's embarrassing
at
journalism,
best.
Right?
And it's to me, it's intentional inflammatory journalism, but... Amid heightened concerns about access to the polls, federal monitors will be in 5 North Carolina counties on Election Day. Now, that sentence right there, Susan, I don't mean to bang this drum too long, but really, what kind of visual does that paint? Amid heightened concerns about access to the polls, federal
people
monitors.
For my age, at least, it gives you a visual of days gone by, and those days are gone. And unfortunately, the WRAL and the groups on the left don't want those days to be gone. And they bring those visions into people's heads.
Yeah, exactly. This tells
me. It's a shame.
This tells me there's concerns about violence.
That's right.
There's concerns about fistfights.
That's right.
And, you know, oh, I can't get out of my car because I might get attacked on the way from my car. And to me, that's just wrong. the concern here is not about that. It's about making sure that the voting process is going smoothly. I think there's the argument can be made, and I think you would agree, that maybe the only intimidation that might occur is that if people, let's say from one party or the other, let's say the Republicans are trying to watch and make sure that there's no shenanigans going on, these federal folks might intimidate them.
That's right.
But the average voter
is not
having trouble getting access to the polls.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And it's I think we wouldn't even be having this discussion if the State Board of Elections, when they had notified the county boards that the observers were going to be there, I had said why and where. From what I understand, they did not announce what precincts they were going to be in and what led up to this happening. If they would have been more forthright, which we have learned in the last couple of years with the State Board of Elections, they don't like to be that way. But if they had been and gotten it out to the public, then there wouldn't be this inflammatory talk from WRAL and people just imagining things that would never happen.
Well, I don't think she knows why. Or if she does, she hasn't told anybody.
Well, okay. If that's right. She hasn't told anybody. You assume that she would know.
Yeah.
Right? She's the one that's the point of contact for DOJ.
That's right.
I would assume she'd know. If she didn't, I would hope that she would ask questions.
Well, so far she has not communicated anything to any of these election officials in the various counties as to why. So anyway, I think this is much ado about nothing potentially. As far as Susan, you don't think the average citizen getting off work on Tuesday or maybe before they go to work, getting out of their car and walking up to the precinct, they're not going to have any problems.
No, they're not going to have any problems. And they probably won't even notice anyone different at the polls, unless, like I said earlier, unless they're wearing vests or something. But they're not going to notice anything. There's so many people, election workers, campaigners, that they won't notice a thing.
Okay. Well, thank you for stopping in here at the opening to the show. I wanted to clarify this. Maybe we'll see big DOJ emblazoned on the back of Blazers. And before you leave, maybe we can see if Matt can grace us one more time with because I want you to be sure, if you haven't decided who to vote for governor, who you can vote for.
Are you ready to elect Ray Cooper, your governor?
Okay, so Ray Cooper.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Susan. All right, well, Susan Myrick, always excellent. She is on top of the whole election process here in North Carolina, as is the Civitas Institute, more than really anyone in the state. You have people who are trying to cause problems and trying to be inflammatory and make accusations. But Susan Myrick is doing, what do they call it, yeoman's work, the hard work, the legwork, the down and dirty staying up late and analyzing numbers and, you know, trying to get to the truth about who's voting and early voting and numbers and demographics. And she is absolutely the best when it comes to giving that kind of information. And you can trust the information that Susan brings to the table because she has done her homework. She's done a good job. She's done the research, and there's no inflammatory, you know, this whole article, I know I've already said this, but this amidst heightened concerns about access to the polls. Really? I mean, come on, WRAL. That's just not true. And that's, I don't know if I'm part of the media or not. I guess sort of I am. I've been a newspaper reporter, a radio host, a producer. So I guess maybe I'm part of the media. And what really bothers me is that particularly on the left, we have people who, you know, they hold on to this moniker of, quote, journalist. I'm a journalist. Oh, you know, I'm a journalist. As if it was some type of, you know, sainthood or something that the Pope has, you know, brought you to the Vatican and, you know, put a big J on top of your head, journalist, as if there's, you know, no question at all about your integrity and about your ability to be a journalist. Well, I see a lot of sloppy, biased, intentional, inflammatory, quote, journalism in our state. And it's wrong. It's just wrong. Well, Mark, you're biased on your show. You're a conservative. That's true. I am a conservative. But one thing I will not do, and I challenge you to find cases where I have done this, is make stuff up with the intention of inciting emotion, of being inflammatory. Yeah, I'll tell you the truth. I will tell you that before the majority party leadership changed in the General Assembly in 2011, the state was in a $3 billion deficit. That's true. That is factual. Look it up. That's not inflammatory. That's not intended to incite hateful emotions. Now, I could come here and get behind this microphone and say, amid heightened concerns of access to the polls. Well, who's having trouble getting access to the polls? Nobody that I'm aware of. Now, will there be? I mean, who knows in this election? But I guarantee you, good folks in North Carolina, all across this state, from Beaufort to Manio to Murphy to Asheville to Raleigh, they're not the ones with heightened concerns. These are folks that just want to, exercise their constitutionally guaranteed right to go and vote. Now, there are other people who may try to incite, and, you know, we've seen people bust in from other states with these rallies at the legislature just trying to do hateful, mean things. Who knows? I hope we don't see any of that. But it's wrong to lead an article with, amid heightened concerns over access to polls, the Justice Department is sending watchers. Oh, my gosh. Are we going to be able to get out of our car? You know, are these going to be Justice Department officials, you know, with Matt, what do they carry? Is it AR-15s or Macs or you're the gun guy here, NC Gun Dad. What would a Justice Department official be packing? A
clipboard.
A clipboard.
I don't know. I guess probably not a Mac 10 or Mac 11. I think that went out a while ago. That was Secret Service used to have those.
So a clipboard.
Maybe a clipboard.
Now,
a clipboard
is that a fully automatic clipboard?
It is an assault clipboard.
Okay. Well, so folks, you know, be on the watch, be on the lookout for heavily armed Justice Department officials with assault clipboards. I mean, this is absurd. It's shoddy journalism. It's wrong. And yet these people hide behind the badge and moniker of journalist as if they are God's gift to writing. And, you know, it's time that people really begin to call these people out and say, look, you're biased. It's wrong. It shows. And we're just not going to give you the time of day anymore. We're going to quit watching. We're going to quit listening. We're going to quit believing this stuff that you put out there. So there, that's my rant on journalism on this Friday. And we've had a little fun with Hillary Clinton, making sure that you vote for Ray Cooper. We have a big, big, big show for you today, folks. This is one of the biggest shows we've had in a long, long time. General Michael Flynn. Yes, none other than General Michael Flynn will be our guest coming up next. We also will have a chat with Tim Boyum and Dr. Bitzer. Dr. Michael Bitzer from Catawba College, who has got his finger on the pulse of all of the early voting. We'll find out from him what the trends are. So I'm going to get out of the way here and make room for a great American General Michael Flynn. But before I do that, I want to remind you, follow us on Twitter at What Matters NC, like our Facebook page, What Matters in North Carolina, and thank you so much for listening. Well, it's quite an honor here on What Matters in North Carolina to have as our guest General Michael Flynn. He is a retired United States Army Lieutenant General and also served as the Director of the Defense Intelligence Agency. General Flynn, welcome to the program, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me, Mark. A real honor to be back down here in North Carolina, a state that I absolutely love and served many, many years here at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, in my military career.
General Flynn, first of all, before we go any further, I'd like to thank you for your service to our country, sir.
Thank you very much. It was a real honor, and I miss it, actually. I miss serving with the great people that we have in our military, all services.
North Carolina has become, in the presidential campaign, General Flynn, what they call a battleground state. We've seen the Clinton folks here repeatedly and often. We have seen the Trump campaign here and often. In fact, Mr. Trump is supposed to be in state, I believe, again tonight, and then also one more time before Tuesday's election. The people here in North Carolina, there are a lot of military folks, as you know. They're active duty veterans, retirees. You're a military person. What would you tell the people of North Carolina is important for them to be thinking about as they decide who they will cast their vote for president of the United States?
Well, I mean, you know, and I'll speak quickly in a second to the great military and that we have here across the state. But I think the most important thing in this country is to get our economy back up and running. I mean, I've been asked, you know, in my military career, certainly as a senior intelligence officer for our country that has studied and been responsible for a lot of things, you know, what's the greatest danger to our country? And it's our weak economy. If we don't have a strong economy, we can't defeat the enemies that are definitely out there that want to go after our way of life. And we can't, you know, do the kind of job we need to do against radical Islamism. We can't take on the Russia or the Chinese. I mean, so we have to have a strong economy. And I think one of the big principles that Donald Trump is really talking about is jobs and bringing jobs back to this country and focusing on us. I mean, from the military perspective, you know, you got, of course, Fort Bragg, you've got Cherry Point, you got Camp Lejeune, you got Seymour Johnson. You have an incredible array of National Guard units in this state. All, and they all know, the, you know, folks that are going to be listening to your radio station, your great station, that, you know, they all know they've been deploying left and right. You know, we have our special forces down at Fort Bragg, our airborne. I mean, so, and then the other aspect of our military, of course, is their families and the sacrifice that their families have been given to our country, in support of everything. And then, of course, the veterans. And Donald Trump has really made a big, big deal out of taking care of our veterans in a way that this administration, and frankly, what Hillary Clinton's talking about, she thinks that the Veterans Administration is just fine. In fact, she almost said verbatim, it's just fine. And we all know it, that it's not. We cannot have the numbers of suicides that we have every day, and we can't have veterans. We can't have illegal immigrants in our country being taken better care of than our veterans.
Wow, that's true.
It's just not, you know, it's inexcusable.
Our guest is General Michael Flynn. General Flynn, in terms of what you just brought up, well, we had a situation here in North Carolina recently where the Salisbury VA was fudging wait times, making them seem better than they were for our veterans. And really, frankly, there's really just no excuse for the way we have heard some of our veterans have been treated, not only at that veterans place, but across the country. We need to take care of our veterans.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, so here's, in one word, it's accountability. And in another word, it's leadership. And the first thing is accountability. People have to be held accountable for their actions in these government bureaucracies that are doing things like what you just described. You know, we cannot allow people to serve for the men and women who have served our country and get away with stuff like that. They have got to be held accountable for their actions and their decisions. And we cannot have people like that serving our veterans. And the second thing is we have such a deficit of leadership from the top down. I mean, from the White House on down. You know, one of the things that I really appreciate Donald Trump for is his very decisive guy, very, very good leader, strong, strong leader. You know, when we think about our current president, we think about, you know, the actions and the judgment of Hillary Clinton and coming into the White House. I mean, she doesn't have anything to hang her hat on in terms of success. You know, nothing. I mean, everything that she touches has failed. Even when she was a senator, most people don't know what her record is as a senator. It's a terrible record as a senator, as well as the Secretary of State. I mean, you know, Libya and Benghazi alone should make us all, you know, reel back and say, God, I can't vote for this person. You know, and where you have Donald Trump, who has been incredibly successful, a businessman for many, many years, built and rebuilt companies, you know, his sort of international enterprise. It consists, I think, of somewhere between 600 and 700 different companies within the Trump International Organization. And then the last thing I would say about him specifically, is the loyalty of his family. I mean, if there's a strength of a person that I'd like to look at, is what kind of family does he have? And boy, I'll tell you what, he's got some beautiful kids, and they're all very loyal to him. His sons, his daughters, very loyal to him. And I think that says a lot. And if your listeners had a chance to hear Melania Trump speak up in Pennsylvania, she did a superb job today, you know, for the potential, you know, for the next first lady. I mean, she was just wonderful. She is an immigrant from Slovenia who came through the immigration system legally and took the time, the couple of years it took her to become a legal U.S. citizen. So that's another big aspect of something that we need to take on in this country. We have to have security. We have to have borders. Hillary Clinton wants to have, she wants to have the United States of North America, or the United States, you know, of Central and South and North America. I mean, she wants to have open borders.
Yeah.
We can't have that. We wouldn't have a country.
General Flynn, going back to the speech that you made at the Republican National Convention, you called President Obama, you say that he's been a weak and spineless leader who coddles terrorists. I think that Americans, you know, it's been a long time since 9/11, and I think the country has gotten somewhat apathetic, somewhat comfortable. In your position, I'm sure you know a lot more than the average person does about these kinds of things, just by virtue of your position.
Sure.
Are we in real danger? I mean, should Americans be concerned about the future in terms of ISIS and terrorism and this sort of thing?
Yeah, here's what I would tell the American public, you know, that, first, a couple of facts. The FBI director has stated that we have over 1,000, the FBI has over 1,000 cases open right now against ISIS-related cases inside the United States.
Wow.
And he presented that last summer. And then about 2 or 3 weeks ago, when he was testifying in front of Congress and making a statement, I believe, he said that because of what's going on in the Middle East and with our going after ISIS in Iraq and Syria, that the likelihood in the next 2 to 5 years here in this country, we should expect the radical Islamist organizations that do exist out there, this network that exists out there to conduct attacks in our country. So, you know, and I know from my own experiences, you know, running one of the largest intelligence agencies in the world, never mind here in the United States, that we saw the rise of ISIS, the rise of radical Islamism, not only in the Middle East, but now they're in over 30 countries around the world. Once the decision by both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama to unplug after the victory that we achieved in Iraq, when they decided to unplug from Iraq in 2011, that left such a void, such a vacuum, and it allowed the Al-Qaeda in Iraq movement, you know, now that we call it the Islamic State, to return and to resurge. And now we're back there. We just, you know, lost another great serviceman, you know, member just a week ago. And in fact, nobody even talks about Afghanistan anymore. We just lost two great service members of ours, in the last 24 hours up in Kunduz in the northern part of Afghanistan. Mm. Nobody even talks about this. This enemy is a very, very dangerous, brutal enemy. And we've already had attacks in our country in Orlando and San Bernardino and other places. And so we cannot look at this enemy and say that, you know, they're gone because Barack Obama says, you know, we're defeating them in Mosul. I mean, this is an enemy that's going to be here for a while until we begin to deal with the ideology that we're up against, which is a very radicalized form of this Islamic political system that exists, and we have to go after it.
Our guest is none other than General Michael Flynn, and we're certainly honored to have you as our guest. Sir, in terms of, people have talked about the candidates and whether or not they would make a good commander-in-chief, and some people have said, well, you know, Donald Trump is a businessman, but I don't think you get to be a billionaire general by being stupid. And in my mind, he would surround himself with people like you and others who have, you know, vast military experience, because the first day on the job, General, you know, there's ISIS, there's this thing in Afghanistan, there's Syria, there's Mosul, there's China rattling themselves in the South China Sea. You've got Russia doing whatever it is they're doing. There's going to be a lot on the plate day one. Are you convinced that Donald Trump is up to the task?
Yeah, I mean, so my answer is absolutely yes. It's a, you know, and I don't hesitate 1 second saying that. You know, and you're and I appreciate that your description of him. I mean, he is a very, you know, smart, savvy, tough, decisive leader, and he's got big leadership, and he knows how to provide intent. So for those your military listening audience, when I say intent, they'll know that the commander's intent, you know, and I know, having spoken with Donald Trump many, many times about these issues, that he knows how to give commanders intent and then allow his subordinates to be able to get out there and do the job that they're very, very capable of doing. Now, we're going to be speaking in Selma, North Carolina here in a few hours.
That's right.
Just south of Raleigh. Yeah, and it's going to be great. There's probably going to be 10,000, maybe more people there. And one of the things that we'll have representatives of the military population, the retired military population there, but there are over 200 admirals and generals who have stood up to say, and they've met with, you know, with Donald Trump to say, we believe in you. We believe you can be our commander in chief. We have 22 Medal of Honor recipients. We have about a half a dozen of them with us today that have all stood up and said, and these are Medal of Honor recipients that have all stood up and said, we want Donald Trump as our commander in chief. And the last thing I would tell you is that, you know, in the surveys of the veterans community and even the surveys inside the military, a large portion of those, you know, the numbers are, you know, they resonate in Donald Trump's corner. And to me, that means that people around our country that know what the military is all about have looked hard at him and they've said, I'm okay with Donald Trump being my commander in chief. I would not be okay with Hillary Clinton being my commander in chief, because frankly, I mean, she's already demonstrated what she would do when people are under fire in Benghazi. She would not act, you know, the proverbial 3 o'clock in the morning phone call where we lost not only four Americans, one of which was a U.S. ambassador. I mean, and then I'm not only sickened by it, but I'm still embarrassed by the fact that happened to the United States of America, and we didn't do anything about it.
Yeah.
And Hillary Clinton was on watch that night and demonstrated to me that she failed the test when it was necessary to take being the commander in chief.
General Flynn, I know your time is limited, but I want to ask you this. What keeps General Michael Flynn up at night?
Well, you know, I mentioned that I really am concerned about our economy. I it's funny that I talk about it because as a military guy, but you know, as somebody who has served at the levels that I've served at and watched the manipulation by China of global markets, that's a strategic warfare tactic, or, you know, it's a tactic that the Chinese use at the strategic level to manipulate currency, and they do it quite well. And that's a dangerous thing for our country. It's not something that's going to, you know, that's going to ruin us in the next 24 hours or the next 4 years, but it could certainly change the way we behave and change the nature of our country over the next, you know, 25 or by the middle of this century. So we have to have strategic thinking for sure. But I will tell you, you know, in terms of what do I feel today and what's dangerous for us today, I really am concerned about these radicalized Islamists that are amongst us, that, you know, somebody just decides to pick up a, you know, a weapon or whatever, or some of these bombs, and walk into a mall or something like that, like we've already seen, or in one of these nightclubs, like we've seen. I hate to have that. And the other thing that's happening inside of our country is we have this assault on law enforcement. I mean, look at that. We just had two more police, great police officers with families, just tragically ambushed, targeted, assassinated essentially yesterday up in Iowa. We cannot have this assault on our law enforcement professionals in this country. And to me, that's a very dangerous thing. And I wish that our leadership from the White House on down would be much more vocal about this. You don't hear anything. You don't hear anything. I mean, of course, the local authorities in Iowa, in this case, or Dallas or wherever, or Baton Rouge, they, you know, they're standing up and saying, hey, we can't have this, but we need to have the president of the United States stand up and talking about this issue, because this is a big, big issue. Instead he's down campaigning for crooked Hillary Clinton. I'm sorry, down in Miami. We have forces engaged in combat in Afghanistan. We just lost two soldiers. We have forces engaged in combat in northern Iraq, and the president's down, campaigning in Miami. I mean, get to work, Mr. President. Go back to and do your job and focus on getting our economy healthy, taking care of the men and women in the military. How about doing some work on the Veterans Administration and fixing that? I mean, God. You got me on my soapbox right now, Mark. I'm sorry.
Well, that's fine, General. And we appreciate your time. We appreciate you being with us here on What Matters in North Carolina. And once again, thank you for your service, sir. And we really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it. And make sure everybody gets out there and votes, okay? Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir. Well, quite an opportunity to interview someone of his stature, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, former director of the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency. And it was interesting to me when I asked him, General, what keeps you up at night? He said, well, the economy, and even a guy who's used to going out to war and fighting battles and that sort of thing understands that a strong economy is certainly a vital part of a strong national defense. He said, be sure to get out and vote. And folks, our next guest is going to let us know that people have been doing just that. The absentee ballot numbers, the early voting numbers, well, they're just peaking. And so we're excited to be talking to Dr. Michael Bitzer of Catawba College. He'll break down the numbers. And believe me, they are quite remarkable. So you want to stick around for that. We're going to take a quick time out. Thanks for listening to What Matters in North Carolina. We'll be right back.
Are you a gun guy? Are you a gun girl? Do you know the difference between a clip and a magazine? Have you gotten into more arguments about 9mm, 40, and 45 than you care to admit? Then you need to go over to the Freedom Action Network and check out the NC Gun Dad Show, where we talk about guns, gear, accessories, and a whole lot more every week. I'm Matt Calder, and I was just another gun guy until the birth of my daughter. Then I became the NC Gun Dad. Join us weekly for a new episode of the NC Gun Dad Show, uploaded every Friday at www.freedomactionnetwork.com, and then click on the NC Gun Dad Show.
Always a pleasure to welcome to What Matters in North Carolina, Dr. Michael Bitzer from Catawba College. Dr. Bitzer, welcome back.
It's great to be with you. Thank you.
Well, before we get into some detailed data, I'd like to get your thoughts about this.
Are you ready to elect Ray Cooper your governor?
A little humor. I guess Secretary Clinton's a little tired and had a little gaffe there yesterday.
I think we're all tired, and I think it's just been everybody is ready for Tuesday to come and go.
Well, on a more serious note, I can't think of anybody who's more busy than yourself. You are diving into the data, and without trying to get too much into the finer points and details, what can you tell us so far about absentee and early voting?
Well, certainly we were expecting, a general sense that maybe the electorate was not as engaged and enthusiastic. By all accounts, in terms of early absentee ballots, either mail-in or in-person voting, which is the bulk of all of these early votes, we are actually running ahead substantially from where we were in 2012 on the same day.
Wow.
Now, the numbers that I see of all the absentee ballots right now, we're standing a little bit about 12% ahead in terms of where we were this time 4 years ago. And if you take the bulk of the absentee ballots, those are traditionally tending to come from in-person accepted ballots. That's ahead by 16% from the same day in 2012.
Wow. That's pretty incredible, don't you think?
It really is. And the shocking thing, the really surprising thing to me, has been the rise of the unaffiliated registered voter showing up early. Excuse me. Traditionally, we tend to see those folks wait until Election Day, but their numbers have increased over 40% this year. in terms of same-day totals from 4 years ago. And I think that is the true wild card. You know, are these people just basically partisans who don't want to self-identify with one party over the other? Are they truly swing voters? It is going to be a lot of data crunching to try and figure out who these folks are, and we may not know until after Tuesday.
Our guest is Dr. Michael Bitzer of Catawba College, professor of political science. I just had a weird thought, but I'm reading here what you have written yesterday. With the third largest number of ballots coming in, 227,100 yesterday, does somebody, I don't mean to be stupid, but are people actually running these things through a machine? That's a lot of work for somebody to do.
You mean in terms of all the ballots that are being cast?
Yeah.
This is the norm. North Carolinians love early voting. In 2012, 61% of the 4.5 million ballots that were cast in our last presidential election came before Election Day.
Wow.
So, this is just the new norm of what North Carolina is experiencing. And if we see a corresponding rise in the electorate, that could mean even more votes than 4.5 million. I would be hard-pressed to see how that goes substantially above 4.5 million. We have seen a bigger overall electorate. We've got about 6.8 million registered voters here in North Carolina right now. So we could see a rise in that. If it's over 4.5 million, boy, I would dare say anybody who's trying to predict this election would be a fool's errand at this point.
Well, you just took my question then, because I was going to ask you to predict this election, but I don't want to send you on a fool's errand. But generically speaking, from what you've seen, does anybody have an edge, at least in terms of what we've seen in terms of the breakdown of the demographics?
Well, among all of the ballots, registered Democrats are actually leading about 43%, but they have hit the same number as they cast 4 years ago. I mentioned that registered unaffiliateds are up substantially. So too are registered Republicans. So I think we're really kind of running in a fairly even, in percentage-wise, basis for this electorate coming up on Tuesday. If you look at the polls certainly have bounced back and forth, but I think on average, they're pretty much in a statistical dead heat. And that's the way it feels to me. This election, probably at the top three, presidential, U.S. Senate, and gubernatorial, they're all just too close to call at this point.
Well, that's certainly a good answer. I'm just kidding. You're right. I mean, this, from all the polling that we've seen, it's a dead heat all the way across the board, except Senator Burr seems to be pulling out ahead in some of the more recent polls. So what does that say to you, if anything, Dr. Bitzer, when the top two races, president and governor, are statistical dead heats, but then there's a bit of a gap and pull away at the U.S. Senate level? Does that say anything to you about what people are doing?
We could potentially see the reemergence of a split-ticket voter in North Carolina. Traditionally and historically, we have had that kind of phenomenon, voting for a Republican at the presidential level, but then voting for a Democrat at the gubernatorial level. I think this year may be something odd in comparison to what we've seen, because I think the dynamics of certain kinds of voters, such as urban white voters who are registered Republican, perhaps suburban white voters who are registered Republican. Are there some concerns about voting for Donald Trump necessarily? Would they vote for Hillary Clinton but then bounce over and vote for Richard Burr as kind of a check on the presidency? I think that there could be any, potential possibilities playing along those lines. My big thing is, could 100,000 votes necessarily define and decide this election, maybe a 2-3 point margin of victory? yeah, I think that's where we are, particularly for the presidential and the gubernatorial, but maybe throw in the U.S. Senate into that mix as well for Tuesday.
Our guest, Dr. Michael Bitzer, who clearly in the state is the leading purveyor of data and explanations of data, and really the service that you provide is without peer, Dr. Bitzer. One thing that I find interesting is that the white voters tend to be pretty strong leading the way. Let's see, among the racial composition, white registered voters continue to be 72% of the ballots. Is that normal?
That in the past two presidential elections, no, that has not been the norm. They have typically been in the high 60s. And the reason for that, I would argue, is probably the most part is because of the top of the presidential ticket, Barack Obama. When he was on the ballot, black voters made up ultimately about 22 to 23% of the electorate. Right now, black voters are certainly running behind their 2012 early votes. So I think that there is something to be said for the issue of enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton. I think that's why you are seeing Barack Obama back in this state, trying to energize and excite the black vote in particularly. But I think this may hearken us back to, you know, a kind of an electorate that we would expect to see perhaps 08 and 2012 with his candidacy was the out of the norm. This may be closer to the norm. The one group that I'm going to be looking at also are among all other races, so Asian, American Indian, those folks who identify as multiracial or give no preference to their race. That group has actually expanded 50% in the early votes from where they were in 2012. So that could be the potential wild card, again, like with unaffiliated voters.
Dr. Bitzer, going through some of this data here, forgive me for not finding this if it's there, but is there a age breakdown yet? I'm curious about millennials.
Yeah, I actually break it into the generational cohorts. And if you consider millennial voters who are under the age of 35, they've actually been creeping up in the percentage of the absentee ballots that have been coming in. I think today they are around, I'm trying to find that specific number, they're at 18%. A couple days ago, they were at 15% of all the ballots. So the numbers appear to be moving up as we get closer to the end of early voting. You know, will they hit their you know marks in comparison to, say, baby boomers? Probably not, because younger voters oftentimes don't show up. But they are becoming a force and a reckoning within North Carolina. Very quickly, they're going to be equal to the number of baby boomers who are registered. So that's going to be a whole new dynamic in this state very, very soon.
Well, it's all very fascinating, Dr. Bitzer, and we certainly appreciate all of the work that you are putting into this.
And I greatly appreciate that.
You know, you're thinking somebody better appreciate it.
I'm getting up at 4:30 and 5 a.m. to start crunching numbers. So needless to say, I'm glad to hear that somebody's, you know, at least it's providing some information to folks.
Well, absolutely. And so, again, we don't want to go down any fool's errands here. But do you, from the trends that you're seeing, is it just impossible to kind of say, okay, we're looking for a big Democrat sweep, we're looking for a big Republican sweep? Is it just not able to extrapolate that kind of a prediction yet?
I would be very hesitant to read anything into these numbers. I mean, the partisans are going to look at these numbers, and they're going to spin it the way that best suits their particular partisan slant. I think right now there's a whole lot of dynamics that are going on that are fundamentally reshaping North Carolina's electorate to the point that we have not seen before. And I think while the past can be somewhat predictive and give us a sense of some baseline, my gut just seems to say this is something that we really are going to have to kind of digest fully to get a full explanation of, and it's going to have to wait until after Tuesday night, unfortunately.
So based on what you've seen early, expecting a lot of turnout on election day.
We could potentially see that. I mean, if these numbers are going to hold and are going to be comparable in terms of saying, you know, 61% have cast ballots early, that makes up another 38%, and that could be a bigger electorate than what we saw in 2012 with 4.5 million.
Wow. Well, Dr. Bitzer, thank you very much, as always, for being our guest. We'll look forward to talking to you after the dust settles from Tuesday, and hope that you have a great weekend. And again, really, all joking aside, we really do appreciate all of the work that you do.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Are you a gun guy? Are you a gun girl? Do you know the difference between a clip and a magazine? Have you gotten into more arguments about 9mm, 40, and 45 than you care to admit? Then you need to go over to the Freedom Action Network and check out the NC Gun Dad Show, where we talk about guns, gear, accessories, and a whole lot more every week. I'm Matt Calder, and I was just another gun guy until the birth of my daughter. Then I became the NC Gun Dad. Join us weekly for a new episode of the NC Gun Dad Show, uploaded every Friday at www.freedomactionnetwork.com, and then click on the NC Gun Dad Show.
Well, it's Friday, and as always, we get a chance to talk to Tim Boyum of Time Warner Cable News, anchor of Capital Tonight. Tim, welcome back to What Matters in North Carolina.
Thanks for having me on. Always good to see you or talk to you.
Yeah, well, you know what? The most important thing on my mind is I'd like to get your opinion on, well, on this.
Are you ready to elect Ray Cooper your governor?
I'm not sure who Ray Cooper is, Tim. Maybe you could help me out.
He's a latecomer. I believe he's a write-in candidate. That's the benefit of having a presidential candidate pumping up your campaign is that they do it. The negative is that they do so many introductions that they might misstate your name.
Well, I'm sure that everybody's a little fatigued at this point, and so a little grace extended there to Secretary Clinton, but that is pretty funny. So how you doing? What have you been up to?
Man, I'll tell you what, I'm struggling with a cold at the end of the week that finally, after a year and a half of this, it caught up to me at the very end. But, you know, we're pretty good. It's been a busy week again. Obviously, this is unprecedented, the push that we're getting from both campaigns. I had a chance to talk with Tim Kaine on Monday. I had a chance to sit down with Ivanka Trump on Wednesday. You know, it's what you'd expect in a state that's this close, that we're gonna end up with such a bang from all the candidates. So I think we are where we thought we were going to be, and I think we're all pretty tired, and we're just waiting to see what happens.
Well, I think we're all pretty tired of the television advertising and the mail, but as you said, the end of all of that is near. So we were talking with Dr. Michael Bitzer, of course. As you know, he does a lot of data crunching and number crunching, and he said that the absentee and early voting is ahead of where we were in 2012, so that seems to indicate, at the very least, that the population, the voting population, is very interested in this election.
Yeah, and you know, the hard part about kind of interpreting this data is A, you can spin it, and B, we're not quite sure what it means. And what I mean by that is turnout is higher for early voting, but there's a couple of things to consider there. I think we have 600,000 new residents that have moved to North Carolina since 2012. And on top of that, more people have learned about early voting, may have decided to get it over with, and so people that might have normally voted on Election Day instead chose to vote in early voting. And all that to just say that I'm not quite sure what we can read into that about what it might mean for the outcome on Tuesday. But, yeah, I mean, I clearly we're going to have a large turnout. You know, it's just it'll be interesting to see how the polls look on Tuesday morning based on what we've seen from early voting.
I live in eastern Wake County, and in Knightdale, the early voting location, went over there last Saturday, Tim, and before they even opened, the line literally was down the sidewalk, out into the parking lot, and looked at least to be an hour and a half wait. Up the road in Wendell, however you'd like to pronounce that, the community center there is an early voting location, and they literally had no one. And it's interesting to me how some places, early voting sites, just get, you know, swamped with, you know, tons and tons of people. And then 4 or 5 miles out, there's nobody. And so we were able to afford ourselves. My wife and I were able to vote at the one in Wendell. And, I mean, we got out of the car, walked in, voted, and went home. And yet, why do you think that is, that the word is just not out? Are people not actively looking around and just going to the place that's closest to them? Or is it just, you know, not enough available information?
You know, I don't know. It's a good question. Some of it could be just that certain voting sites are more visible and people know about them much easier. That's a good question. You know, I was actually going to plan on voting on Election Day, because I think that actually might be the easiest day to vote, just from pure simple, two-thirds of the electorate will probably have voted by Election Day, and it's across the street from my neighborhood. But I drove past one in southeastern Wake County, and it was just opening, and there was only a line of about 15 or 20 people. It still took me about 30 minutes, but you know, I just think timing plays a big role into it, and I think, you know, Chapis Heights, I think, is one of them in Raleigh that is always packed.
Yeah.
It for some reason has a reputation almost for early voting, but yeah, you almost wish they could do a sort of a live update of where the sites are and where the lines are based on, you know, so people could pick and choose to do that, and I'm sure we'll see that in the future.
Well, that sounds like a Tim Boyan project for one of your camera folks. Just send them out and live cut
in there and put up on the web.
Yeah, exactly. So our guest is Tim Boyan, of course, the excellent anchor of Capital Tonight at the Time Warner Cable News Channel. So word is out now that the Justice Department will send observers to 5 of the counties, I believe it is, in North Carolina, including Wake and Mecklenburg, Cumberland, and Forsyth. And so I guess that's 4. But the notion of having Justice Department watchers here is not new to North Carolina. They've been here in the past, and yet they seem to be trying to make a big deal about that this year. I don't think, in my mind, Tim, I don't think that the voting public is really going to even be aware that they're there. Or do you think that there might be some, you know, things that go awry that might warrant them being there?
Well, I don't know about the latter part of that. I guess it's always possible. I mean, this has been a rough and tumble election cycle. I think there's, you know, we've seen what's happened at rallies. We've seen what's happened with just even rhetoric from both sides of this campaign. So, I mean, I think it's always possible. But, you know, I think you're right. I think most people have no idea. There's helpers that are out there waiting in line. There's helpers that are helping handicapped in. And I think people will not know the difference. It's not like they're going to, I would assume they're not going to be wearing some, you know, bright neon yellow outfit that tells them that they're a federal watcher or not.
Yeah.
I don't know. It'll be interesting. I've been telling people as much as anything, you know, we've been so anticipating the results of this election upcoming. I actually think the hardest day is going to be Wednesday moving forward, about how not only this country moves forward together, but also elected officials. Because regardless of who wins this election on a national state level, this has been a vicious election cycle, and sides have basically promised to not work with the other side. So I don't know what's going to happen moving forward.
Well, here's a thought that I had, and you can weigh in on this, Tim. I think it's been vicious in the media. I think it's been vicious on the part of you know, people who are actively involved in this sort of thing. But I think there's a great portion, I was going to say swath, but I can't do that on the radio, a great portion of people in America, just regular folks, that, you know, they're going about their business. And so unless, you know, either side decides that they don't like the way the thing turned out and, you know, begin to try to stir things up. I mean, are you really anticipating, you know, heated aftermath?
Well, I don't know about a heated aftermath, but, someone posed that question to me about whether, you know, are we concerned about riots afterwards, you know, and I don't think we'll see that. But, you know, I have seen on social media just everyday Joe Schmoes that are normally very cordial on Facebook and Twitter, that are, it's just the level of discourse between even average people is disturbing in some levels. It's really remarkable how out front it has become. And of course, social media has done that on a number of, you know, topics, not just election, but, you know, it's changed the way we communicate. It's not face to face. So it allows people perhaps to behave in a way that they normally wouldn't when interacting with people. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't expect, you know, riots or things like that to happen. I think most people would still be surprised if either candidate doesn't accept the election, assuming it's not, you know, within, you know, 10,000 votes or an electoral vote.
Yeah, exactly.
But I do think it's going to be a challenge to sort of move forward united, not only from an elected official standpoint, but from the general public as well. I'm hoping I'm wrong, but.
Yeah, exactly. Same here. So one last question, more locally involved, Tim. What are you hearing about a special session to deal with the aftermath of Hurricane Matthew? I know that Governor McCrory has called for that, or at least hinted that he will call for that. Are we going to see that after the election?
Yeah, I get the sense that we will. I think we'll probably see it in early December. And there's two really reasons for that, from my understanding. Is one is the governor still believes that there's enough money in the account for, you know, to get through January. But in order to get the process moving in a lot of things, you know, architects, engineers, all that kind of stuff, I think the governor believes he needs the promise that there will be more money there.
Okay.
To move the process forward. And so I think there's going to be a bill related to that. And I also think schools want more information before the end of January and February on how they can handle their calendar flexibility based on how many days a lot of kids miss school in Eastern North Carolina. So I think those two issues would come up. There's been murmurs of other rumors. You know how it is all the time with stuff that could happen. But I do suspect that we'll see a special session somewhere, maybe that first week in December.
Okay, well, we'll look forward to that. Tim, we'll look forward to talking to you next Friday and finding out what happened, and we know that you'll have expert analysis on that. So thank you very, very much, as always, for being our guest here on What Matters in North Carolina.
Always a pleasure. Have a great weekend.
You too, sir. Thank you. Tim Boyum, always Natalie attired with bow tie, and does a great job on Capitol tonight, and certainly he will be very busy over the next few days. Always appreciate him taking time out on Fridays to bring us up to date with what he has been working on and really getting his thoughts on what he sees in this very active election year. Well, we've had a huge show today. Quite frankly, I was just really excited about interviewing General Michael Flynn. I've been hoping to do that since about June, and it finally came to pass. So very much appreciate his time with us here on What Matters in North Carolina. Always a pleasure to talk to Dr. Michael Bitzer, and we'll be doing that again after the election at some point. And also Tim Boyum, of course, our regular friend on Fridays. So as we head into this weekend, are you going to vote? Have you voted? Well, no, I ain't going to vote. My vote don't matter. Well, folks, it does matter. And to echo General Flynn, please get out and vote. It really is important. We can't tell you who to vote for here. We won't do that. We don't endorse candidates. But we, as conservatives, as American citizens, understand the value and the privilege of voting. So if you're having second thoughts, have a third thought and go vote, okay? It's really important. Well, I don't want to stand in that line. Look, you know, just do it. You still have an opportunity to vote early. Find a place where it's not crowded and go in and vote. It took me and my wife 5 minutes or less. So do it, because it's that important. People are giving their lives every single day in the military so that you and I can vote. It's that important. So please make plans to either early vote or go out on election day and do that. Monday is shaping up to be quite a show. We'll get another update from Mayor BJ Murphy of Kinston, and a lot's been going on down there, so we'll bring you up to speed on what's happening there in the aftermath of Hurricane Matthew. Also, Mayor Monday will be talking with Mayor James Roberson of Knightdale, my mayor, and looking forward to that. And we've got a couple of surprises for you that we're working on that will hopefully pan out. Hope that you have a great, great weekend. And remember that you can find us on Twitter at What Matters NC and like our Facebook page, What Matters in North Carolina. Thank you, as always, for listening. Please be sure to tell your friends and family. Check us out on freedomactionnetwork.com or in the iTunes and Google Play stores. In fact, why don't you just get everybody know to download the show every day, have it sent to your phone and your computer. It's that easy. Thanks for listening. Have a super weekend, and we will talk with you again on Monday here on What Matters in North Carolina.